If today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. I think that's kind of curious. I try and imagine, you know, does it just take one voice to harden our heart? And I try and look for that in that very common phrase. In the office of readings, every priest promises to pray his breviary. Lots of other people pray the breviary as well. I don't want to just say the priest to it, but every priest promises to say his breviary. We pray Psalm 95 at the beginning of every day. I hear this psalm every day, and every day I pray this, and I consider it. So I hear this a lot, this, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. And I think about this, and I think of the people I know best, because honestly, that's the fastest way to set something is the unfamiliar. If it was unfamiliar, we might be more curious. But I remember in seminary, just certain seminarians that just grate on your nerves. Maybe they didn't grate on yours, they did grate on mine. And you just hear their voice and you set your teeth and you grit, and suddenly you're kind of frozen in that moment. You're like, oh, now what's going to happen? You know, what do we have to do now? What conversation are we going to have to have? There's that moment where we just suddenly are set. And I don't imagine seminary is a unique place for this. I imagine anywhere where we work or people we interact with, that, you know, we just hear that voice and then suddenly what happens next? And are we hardening that heart? Are we already tuning out before we even give it a chance? We already know what they're going to say. We've already decided how that's going to go, and so we've already set out. And it doesn't even have to just be people that bother us in the sense that we find them frustrating or tiresome or any of those challenges. We can hear it in the nagging of things that we know we should do, but we don't want to do. It can sound like our father or our mother or our brother or our sister. Usually it's most annoying from siblings when they remind us of things we're supposed to do that we don't want to do. Okay, maybe that's just me. But, you know, there's that moment where, you know, for that nagging that we suddenly sort of harden out. We tune out. And yet, curiously enough, the great challenge in Habakkuk, the great challenge in the Gospel, is this question of increasing our faith. Lord, help us increase our faith. What will it take to increase our faith? Habakkuk says, you know, the just one, because of his faith, shall live. What is it in this faith that allows us to do this, to weather any difficulty, to be there, and to believe that God will be there for us? And I think it actually comes a lot down to whether or not we hear his voice. There's this challenge here that actually is he almost more complicated than we give it credit in some sense, because God speaks to us in so many ways, in so many places, from so many people. And we can argue, well, you know, if God spoke to me directly, then it wouldn't be so confusing. Then I'd know it clearer, and then I would just do it because I knew it was God, and God told me to do it, and therefore I would do it, and everything would be fine. Except if we read Psalm 95, we know that that's not the case, because if we can't pretend that we're going to be so different from any other group, we can strive to be better, but honestly, what happens is Psalm 95 reminds them that I don't want to harden my heart like we did at Massa and Meribah. Massa and Meribah was when Moses was leading the people out of Egypt. At Massa and at Meribah, he gave them water. God literally spoke directly to Moses. Moses literally spoke directly to the people, and he would say, God says this. It wasn't through mystery, it wasn't indirect, it wasn't unclear, it wasn't through analogy, it wasn't in any way a struggle to understand. Moses would come out and say, you need to stop doing this and this and this, and you need to start doing this and this and this. There's no confusion, there's no subtext, there's no hiding it. Did they do it? No. No, instead they picked fights. And Meribah and Massa, they accused God of wanting them to die, even though every promise leading up to that was he was leading them out to be close to him. And they said, here we're going to die. God hates us. We're going to die. It didn't say that. It didn't even set out to do that. It got to the point where they hear Moses ranting on about the same thing over and over again. Why? Because they wouldn't listen the first time. Because at some point, we began to harden our hearts even against the things that we know we should be listening to. That voice became familiar, and we had to tune it out. And they lost faith. And it became that separation. That very simple, believe it or not, separation that says if we really want to increase our faith, if we really want to live into the challenge that the gospel laid before us, that is laid out in the prophet, to really grow in our faith is to hear that voice. And instead of freezing up, instead of cleansing our jaw, instead of resisting immediately, we hear it out. And we allow God to speak in that quiet. Whether God speaks through someone else, maybe it's someone we want to hear from, maybe it's someone we don't want to hear from, but suddenly they say those hard things we know we need to hear. Or whether it's just in the silence of our hearts. When we enter into a silence and God speaks at the very longings, at the very heart of who we are, will we hear Him when He calls? Will we respond when God invites us there? That's that challenge. It's the invitation of Psalm 95, and very much a challenge of Psalm 95. And in many ways, I'm grateful that I have to pray every day, because I have to be reminded over and over again that if today I hear that voice, I got to be open to it. I have to be receptive to it, or I'm not going to grow in my faith at all. And faith is that tricky one. Faith is that tricky one because we have to learn to let go. We can grow in charity. It is a gift from God, but we can learn to grow in that charity by learning to grow in our love for our neighbor. And we can learn to grow in our love for our children and our spouses and our family. And we can really build towards something there. If we want to strengthen our minds and our bodies, we can study knowledge, or we can exercise. We can sharpen all these things. But faith is a little more tricky because we have to learn to let go and let God. And that becomes a little more dicey. I think farmers have a lot of practice with this because they don't control the weather, so they learn to let go a little better sometimes. But so much in our culture, we want to hold on. We want to be in control. We want to be the guiders, the one that really makes sure that we've got the hand on our rudder so that we know where the ship is going. And really, the challenge of faith is to let go. It's to know that God is actually going to do this. To know that God is the one in charge, and to really allow Him to do that. And we do that by listening patiently and hearing Him. And if we can hear that voice speak softly to us, then we can respond to it. And it's hard sometimes. Okay, that's not fair. It's hard most of the time. It's genuinely difficult most of the time. Because it's going to come at those really frustrating moments, those really inconvenient moments, those moments when we're distracted or bored or tired or really set on something else. And so suddenly, the last thing that we're ready to do is to hear that voice and be patient and allow that to happen. I'll give you an example. This is the month of October. The month of October is dedicated to Our Lady of the Rosary. We have an invitation from so many of the Marian apparitions to pray the Rosary as a family every day of October. Pray the Rosary more often, and that's fantastic. But there's this invitation to pray the Rosary every day in October, a special, particular one. And I remember growing up as a family, we prayed the Rosary as a family in October. It was the single biggest fight we could put up in October. We would fight our parents the whole way. We'd find reasons why we shouldn't do it, why we're too busy, why we have to do our chores or our homework. And suddenly we were very active individuals who had suddenly very busy things to do around the house, you know, not even, you know, outside of that. But we would fight it the whole time. And then the Rosary itself would become this kind of weird war where, you know, you measure siblings against each other and how well each one can do a decade and who's lucky enough to get a decade. Realize there are six siblings. There are only five mysteries. It wasn't such a problem when they were too young to keep track of these things and couldn't count to 10. But, you know, at a certain age, they learn these things, and suddenly, you know, who gets the five mysteries? And how well do they pray them? You know, someone prays them too fast, and some pray them too slow, and they're trying to grow in their holiness, when really you just want to hit them over the head and pick up the pace a little bit. And the whole thing becomes this struggle, this genuine struggle. But God still speaks to us in that rosary. We still prayed it as a family. It was hard and frustrating, and sometimes we did it really late at night because that was the only time that we were all home. And sometimes we weren't sure if we were going to get to it because we had to wait to see when that was going to happen. But one way or another, we made it that priority. And it happened. Couldn't we hear God in that moment? Can we hear God in the mystery, even though your siblings pray in the decade and they're praying way too fast, and you know they're just trying to race through it because they want it to be done as quickly as possible, and they think they can shave off just a few more minutes if they pray it just a little faster? Can we still hear God? Can we pray through the next mystery? Because Dad's commandeered the next mystery because he wants it to pray at a nice pace. He doesn't want it too fast and he doesn't want it too slow, but he thinks we should really reflect on it. But now you're thinking, man, he's going to add another 3 minutes to the rosary because, you know, we had such a good pace going, and now I'm not really sure how long it's going to take. Rosary only takes 20 minutes, by the way, and that's going at a slow pace. This isn't rocket science, and yet we're agonizing over these minutes. Like, suddenly our lives are so very important that we can't give up this little space of time for God and family. But can we hear his voice in that quiet, in that silence, in that moment? If today you hear his voice, harden not your heart. October is also a month dedicated to life. January is the Roe v. Wade decision, but October is a month dedicated to life. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Our Lady of the Rosary and dedication to life happen on the same month. And we do so many, we make so many efforts in this country to try and remember that there is a great atrocity that occurs right here in our very country. And we can talk about horrible deaths, and we can talk about horrible events that happen throughout the world, and the great tragedies that occur with these things. We talk about these big numbers, these big death tolls, these big challenges where, you know, any life and loss of life is this terrible, terrible thing. You know, President Obama said at the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, he said they had their whole lives ahead of them. Jobs, families, all the potential for life and growth. And it was all taken away from them before they could even make a choice. And I stopped and I heard that and I thought, huh, this past week 1,200 babies were aborted. They had their whole lives in front of them. And it was taken away before they ever had a choice. We now face a number in somewhere in the range of 55 million aborted children in our country. And I know there's a big argument, you know, aborted fetuses, they're not really children, and I defy someone to tell me they aren't really people just because they were taken away before that opportunity could happen. And I know the numbers, and I'm always fascinated by them, but numbers just become something detachable. We kind of become detached from the numbers and we just sort of speak of them offhand. So many die, so many die, so many die, that 55 million are lost since the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision. Well, numbers are one thing, but we can just sort of throw them around. You know, we have trillions in debt. What's another 55 million? It's just another number. It just goes out there. Reconsider for a moment. I am Generation Y. A third of my generation has gone through abortion. A third of my generation. We didn't even lose that many to World War II. For every two people I know my age, I should know another. I don't even like meeting people. It terrifies me. Now I have to meet more of them. You think, well, that might be easier. No, it's not. Because now I don't even have a chance to know them. They might even be the people that drive me the crazy the most, but I need to know who they were. And they're gone. And I didn't even get a chance. I'm the fourth of six children. Now I point out, in this parish, we have lovely big families, and it's very exciting, and it's encouraging. But I'm the fourth of six children. Do you realize that my mother was looked down upon when she had her fourth child? How dare she do that? I have two little brothers. How dare she do that? You know, Beethoven was, I think, the 7th or the 9th child. I don't remember which one, but it's one of them. His father was destitute. He was considered enormously irresponsible for having so many children by today's standards. 2 of his siblings have birth defects. Why would they have ever allowed him to be? Well, he's Beethoven for one thing, but they don't know that until he gets to be born. In this country, we face one of the greatest tragedies I have ever read about in my life. And I read history with such a passion. I cannot fathom the indifference that someone has to reach to decide that life has to be measured by convenience. An inconvenient pregnancy. An unexpected pregnancy. Rest assured, I don't plan a lot of things in my life. That doesn't mean they don't happen. And I'll grant you, children are expensive and hard and frustrating. If you don't think so, talk to a teenager. They can be enormously frustrating. But it's life. And it is a gift. And each and every one of us is a gift. Consider for a moment, if we were considered burdens instead of gifts. We've rewritten the language. We talk about these things as something to write off, to something to become indifferent and casual about. This notion that somehow children are just something in the way, and that, you know, until they become something useful to us, maybe they're just not worth the effort. And then we really need to think about our own needs first, and our own desires, and our own dreams. It turns this level of selfishness that I just can't fathom. This idea that, well, we need to make sure that we're getting what we want out of life. And I have to stop and ask, children take away from what you want? Or ask a parent, can they truly open up possibilities that you never thought were there? It becomes very curious to me because growing up, I don't even know why, but everywhere I went, if I went by myself anywhere, children were considered the great inconvenience, the great nuisance, the problem. More and more places we just weren't supposed to be, we weren't supposed to go. Well, then it became kind of obvious to me that if we weren't wanted as children, why should we even care about the people who didn't want us when we became adults? Becomes little wonder that my generation has no interest in getting involved in organizations of any kind who don't have any actual grasp or desire to be contributing because nobody wanted them. Instead of people became problems. And then we justified it and said, well, maybe we should just try and prevent it. And we link contraceptive abortion. And rest assured, a chemical contraceptive is just as vicious as the abortion itself, because somewhere along the line, we decided that our pleasure and our desire became more important than the openness to what happens in nature, the very natural process of life. And the two are linked. They are not unrelated. And if you pretend to think that they are unrelated, ask yourself why the same companies provide both. Because they are, in fact, connected at the very heart of what it is. And I realize that this might be things that we don't want to hear. And we might harden our hearts and think, you know what, I'm just not ready for this. But we do need to honestly ask ourselves, are we a nation that's open to life, to genuinely protecting the weakest and the most defenseless among us? Or have we become a nation indifferent to the struggle of the person next to us? And instead, are just concerned about our own needs? Because I see this reading from the prophet Habakkuk, and I see it, and I see how long, O Lord, I cry for help, but you do not listen for violence, and there's no intervention. And I see our own nation struggling with violence. destruction. If today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. We must say something today. Because if we don't say something today, no one will care what we say tomorrow. We stand up because it's important that we are concerned for our neighbor in every aspect and not indifferent to the struggles right here at home.